Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Relationship Marketing 101. Directions University at directionsu.com delivers passion-powered results for your life and business so that you can live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone. This is your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com. I am calling to you live this week from Valparaiso, Indiana, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. And I have my wonderful friend and co-host, Rhonda Del Baccio, the story lady, with me today. Hello, Miss Rhonda.
Well, hello there to Gina and to everybody. Am I excited about our show today. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I can't wait.
I know. So, yeah, today puts the burr in November for sure. It's cold out here and windy. Hadn't even let the chickens out yet.
It's cold and windy here, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I've left the chickens in because wind is not that great for them, and I'm trying to not give them as much outside time today.
Oh, boy. Here it feels like it's going to snow. It's certainly cold enough for it, that's for sure.
Oh, yeesh.
We still don't have our motorhome fixed, so I'm still stuck in cold Indiana.
Oh, burrish. That's no fun.
I know. Talked to the lawyer last night. I'm like, please, by Friday, give me a way out of this.
Yeah, I was going to say by Friday. Otherwise, you better be a snowbird, right?
Oh, it's either that or we're hopping in the car, driving south, and either finding an apartment or a hotel. Because it's not going to, I'm not staying here for the whole winter. This is not doing it.
No, that's not going to be good for your health for certain.
That's for sure.
So.
We've got a great guest here this week that I've been really looking forward to.
She is just really fabulous. And I found our guest today, I'll just mention, because I listened to this podcast about radio from Wayne Riley, the radio guy. And he gave out some inspirational audios and interviews that he has done with people that he just loved and the people loved. And Alicia Huck was one of those people, and she is our guest. Well, the minute I heard her vivacious self in that audio, I was like, oh, have to have her, absolutely must. And so I'm very pleased that she accepted the invitation and that she is here with us today. So she is somebody who is small but feisty. Over the past 10 years, she has personally developed and delivered programs to approximately 2,500 participants in audiences ranging from 5 to 500 and an average size of about 20 participants. She does some pretty awesome training programs with them. So she has also held over 1,300 formal individual coaching sessions with people. Now, her career began quite literally in the school of hard knocks, as in knocking on the door, because she was a door-to-door salesperson and a manager during college. And although she was one of the tops as a salesperson and as a manager, it was the coaching and training were her real talents and, of course, her passion, which we love that word around here, were able to be revealed and to come forth. And after time in the corporate world, working with another training company, she founded Maverick & Company, and now she is a highly talented speaker, facilitator, coach, and consultant. And her first book, which is a step-by-step marketing guide for service providers and small business owners, will be out very soon. So, Alicia, welcome to our show.
Well, hi, ladies. Thanks for having me.
Hey. Wow, I'm so excited that you are here, and this is just fantastic.
Well, I appreciate the invitation. It's always it's good to be with people doing good work.
It certainly
yeah,
is.
Absolutely. I would certainly agree with that.
Your site says you've got so started in the school of hard knocks quite literally. What were you selling back then?
Well, I was one of those kids with the Southwestern Company. We sold educational books for kids, you know, to help out with math and science and social studies door to door, 80 plus hours a week, straight commission. I did that for 5 summers, which is it's a really good way to learn about life and yourself and how to keep yourself moving when you don't want to be moving. And if you can learn to have fun doing that job, you can pretty much have fun doing any job.
Absolutely. My husband used to be a sales guy, and he retired at the age of 42 back when I was learning that I had 12 to 18 months to live 6 years ago. But I know what it used to be like for him coming home every day after cold calling door-to-door for all these businesses. Oh, goodness, that was a hard job.
Yeah, it really
I'm sure it had to be exhausting.
It takes a special kind of person, and I could not have made a career out of it. I mean, for me, and what I didn't realize at the time, but it was the group of people that I was with that made it workable for me. I'm a little bit too much of a softy, so as an independent professional, cold calling really did not work for me. I would just come home every day and cry, I think.
I know. Yeah. I would, for sure.
Yeah, it's very intense.
As a doctor, I would think anything's a piece of cake, right? Right.
I think it's one of those things when you hear stories about people going through something really difficult, and sometimes you think, oh, you know, my bad day can't be anything like what their bad day is like. I think that whatever your worst day is still your worst day, and past challenges versus present challenges is a lot the same. I think whatever you're struggling with is what you're struggling with. So those memories are good because they help keep things in perspective, but you know, I think it's also good not to go too far down the road of, well, I shouldn't feel bad about my stuff because there's so much worse things in the world, because the truth is you do feel bad about your stuff.
That is a good point.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Well, Alicia, what did you learn from that experience of this door-to-door 80 hours a week exhausting type of stuff that actually helped you in your later aspects of your work?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, I did that for 5 summers, and every summer was very, very long. And, you know, I'm a farmer's daughter, so I was definitely not unfamiliar with hard work. But when I started, I was somebody who was very hard on myself. And I don't think I'll ever really lose that characteristic. I think people basically tend to be either too hard on themselves or not hard enough, right? They either tend to be a little bit too lazy or a little bit too intense. And so what I noticed around me is that people who were a little too easy on themselves, a little too relaxed, it was fairly – once they figured out how to sort of ramp up, that made a huge difference in how productive they could be, because they weren't used to being focused. Sort of were just happy-go-lucky, right? And if you could get them to be really focused, they could produce great results. So that switch didn't seem to be as hard as the one that I was trying to make, which is very hard to tell a person who's too intense to relax, because we don't really understand it.
No.
We don't know what that means. We're like, and then we try really hard to relax, and that doesn't work very well. So it's hard to stay in motion and calm yourself down simultaneously. So I think the best thing that I got out of it was really learning what it was to have a relaxed sense of intensity, where you can be focused on your goals, you can be moving and, you know, diligent about what you're doing, but really where you know where to ease up on yourself and where to pull back so you don't drive yourself. I mean, I would just go until there was nothing left. And I still have to guard against that tendency, but it was really great at an early age to get exposure to thinking about how I performed best and then play with what really worked for me. And that's benefited me my whole life since.
So your business today is, on your website, I saw like 2 or 3 different things. Do you work primarily with small businesses, or who do you work with today?
Yeah. Well, and I apologize. I think we ended up sending you guys a bio that's a little bit old, so I apologize for that. It's always interesting to hear your own credentials being read, right? My business today looks a little fragmented, but really all of the things that I do tie together. And I would describe it as there's 2 basic groups of work that I do with people. So on one side, it's really about performance. It's how do you get people to perform well and organizations to perform well. So So I don't do a lot of executive coaching anymore, but I'll get called in with a small business owner who has a couple of employees who are at each other's throats. Or, you know, an executive of a larger company will call me because the executive team is dealing with some major challenges. They're trying to launch some new initiatives. They've made major changes, and how do we get those all the way down to the bottom line? Because, in the work that I did with Southwestern and beyond, a lot of my work was how do you get people to do the things. You know, we all kind of know what we ought to do in life. We know we shouldn't eat this. We know we should work out. But there's a big gap between knowing what you ought to do and what makes the most sense and actually getting yourself to do it. So,
yeah.
Yep.
Sure.
I heard
that's universal. I think everyone can agree to that, right?
Yeah. Well, I heard somebody the other day, I kind of remember where they found this from, but the analogy was there are two segments of your brain, and what I would call the limbic center is sort of the emotional center of your brain, the animalistic, and the analogy this person had used was that the limbic center is like an elephant, and your neocortex, where all your rational thinking is, like a person. So you've got one person riding an elephant. And if you can get the elephant to go where you want, game on. Sometimes the elephant doesn't feel like it, and you're not going to the gym that day.
Oh, that's really funny.
I love that.
Yeah. I started doing when I speak to groups, I started talking about that human beings are social monkeys. Because it's a nice way of remembering that we really don't make decisions with our rational brain primarily. There's a whole lot of other things driving how we make the choices that we make. So on the performance side, really understanding how people work and how organizations work. And then on the other side, because I had a lot of experience as a door-to-door salesman, but the skills that I learned there and in the more traditional model of sales didn't work very well when I became a consultant. You know, I couldn't just hard close people, right? The analogy I use is that traditional sales is a little bit like dating. You don't have to be in love with the person. You can spend a pleasant evening. You know, it's a different kind of relationship. But when you become a consultant, when you're an accountant or a CPA, you have longer term, more intimate relationships. It's a lot more like getting married. So what I knew about dating and traditional sales didn't work. So I had to develop new strategies for how do you find the right people to have be your clients and how do you help them find you. So I do performance work on one hand, and then on the other I do a field which I would call client development. It's very different from traditional sales and marketing, but it's a business development set of strategies designed for people who have who sell professional services.
Gotcha.
Wow.
Do you know the name Stephanie Frank?
Oh, say that again, please.
Do you know the name Stephanie Frank?
I don't think I do. Who is that?
Stephanie is one of my mentors, and she's also kind of in the performance arena. She does a lot of consulting. She basically helps people learn more about how they can operate at peak efficiency.
Yep.
You guys got to meet because you guys are very, very similar in terms of your area of expertise.
Sure,
and like
I love
you. Stephanie is also very high power. You guys would really get along well. I bet you'd become best friends instantly.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I'd love to meet her. You know, it's an interesting field, and I'm just kind of a nerd, and I was always. You know, some people like to take things apart. I like to take ideas apart. And when I was a manager with the Southwestern Company, I mean, I became a sales manager at 19, which is both incredibly optimistic and incredibly foolish. You know, so I was recruiting and training and managing. And, you know, there were a lot of us that have done that job. So, you know, people that might end up listening, they go, I did that too. I know, it's a big deal, right? But it's interesting to think about because when I sold books, you could see right away whether or not what you did made a difference. I mean, you would train people in the spring. You knew within 2 weeks of our summer whether or not what you did worked. And then you would
They would either have sales or not.
Yeah, you would meet with people on Sunday, and you could tell by Monday night when their numbers came in, you know, did they take the actions that they needed to take? Were you effective? You know, were their sales good? Were they even working? Because, I mean, obviously, in door-to-door sales, it's getting people to move is one of the biggest challenges. So it was a lot of almost instantaneous feedback, and I think performance is a unique field because there's not very many places where you get that. You're usually one of a whole bunch of different things influencing the outcomes, and in that world, you could really see. I mean, it either worked or it didn't. It was pretty clear. So,
and
it's
like
an interesting
you,
field.
Stephanie also had a lot of responsibilities and a lot of success at very young ages. She used to do consulting for the Pentagon.
Nice.
She calls herself a nerd also, right? She was a computer geek.
Yep, she does. I know. I mean, they really remind me of each other, doesn't that for you, Gina?
Even their laughs are almost identical.
I know. It's like two pieces of a pod. My gosh, these two got to meet right away.
I would love to. I sometimes wonder if there's not a warehouse of people that look a lot like me and sound a lot like me, because almost everywhere I go, somebody knows somebody, and they go, you look just like Sarah. And, you know, I get mistaken for other people, and I always think, man, there must be a lot of us, and it's odd that I don't run into me more often.
Well, you guys don't look a lot alike, but, boy, you speak the same lingo, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Right.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's interesting, and I think it's important for people in all fields to really, you know, sometimes people sort of close themselves off and they don't want to meet others who do the same types of things. But I think the more sophisticated your knowledge base is about what you do, the harder it is
right.
to find contemporaries that you can really share it. Because, you know, if I've only taken basic math, I can't really talk to anybody about calculus because I'm just not going to get it. But if you get two, you know, quantum physics experts in a room, that's a heck of a conversation right there.
It really is, and I know one of the things that happens for Stephanie so often is that when she does do work with larger corporations, and she's done work with some really big corporations, there isn't enough of Stephanie to go around. And to have someone with her knowledge, she just hasn't had a lot of that in her life. She doesn't need a lot of Stephanie's. The two of you working together on a project, I bet, would give a bigger corporation an amazing outcome.
Yeah. Well,
oh,
it sounds like it would be fun to be a mini Stephanie.
Well, I don't know. She's one of my mentors, but I'm really loving you, too. So.
Oh, thank you. It's not meaning you're less than her. Not at all.
Oh, no,
just that you guys, I think, would have such a great synergy. Just imagine being able to reach out to bigger companies or whatever with what the two of you have and the fact that you could speak the same language. It's like Gina and I do things so similarly. When she looked at one of the processes I teach people, it was almost identical to something that she teaches people. And so, you know, I can go in and work with her students, and everything's fine. There's not a worry of, oh, is she going to do something that's against my values or something, you know?
Yes.
And that makes my life so much easier because I know that I don't have to do it all myself. There is backup if I need it.
That
and
is a wonderful
that
moment.
Makes a huge difference.
It's a good moment when you understand you don't have to do it all yourself, right? That's a really,
no,
it's like
it
a wow
sure
moment.
Is.
You're like, hang on, what? You mean I, this, hang on, back up a second.
It sure is. So let's talk about what small businesses should be doing to get more performance out of themselves and of their employees.
You know, I think one of the biggest things that people can do is to really think about the environment that they're in that helps them produce results. And I don't necessarily mean your physical environment, although I would include that in it, but let me put it this way. In our culture, we really bought into a guru model where if I'm, you know, let's say I run an insurance agency, right, and I want to be the best insurance agent that I can be, then what I should do is find a guru insurance agent, somebody who has achieved all the success that I want to have, and then I should copy exactly what they do, right? And we see that over and over. That's lots of people have made a lot of money selling books, like, I'm the guru, here's the way. The thing I think that is, it's great as a model because you get a lot of different ideas from a lot of people who can speak with a lot of authority about what they have found that works. But the thing I think that doesn't work about it is it has people not trust what they themselves know about what works for them.
Mm-hmm.
Getting people have a success type almost like a blood type. And so if you have the same success type as Tony Robbins, then his stuff is going to match perfectly with what you do. And this is certainly the case for a lot of people. They fall completely in love with him. They do exactly what he says, and it produces the same results for them that it did for him. And some of his things are universal. Some of his things will work for anybody. the problem is a lot of times we go to a conference or we read a book, and we've all done this, right? You hear all these great ideas, but then you get home and Monday morning rolls around and nothing's different, right? And a lot of times we will try to implement somebody else's ideas, but they don't necessarily work for us, so we either reject them or they end up working against us and we get less productive. You see it a lot with filing systems. They'll go, here's the system, and they try to implement it, and they spend a lot of time and energy on it, and then a few weeks later, they have the same system they did before that. So, you know, I think people need to look at what works for me and really think about what kind of things are going on days when I have really good days and what's happening when I have really bad days. Because we think it's sort of this magical mystery, some days are just good, some days are just bad. But the truth is we've all had days where everything in the world goes wrong and we're still productive, we're still happy, we're still efficient. It kind of rolls off our back, right?
Yes.
And we've also had days where everything goes right and we're still cranky and annoyed and unproductive.
Yep, I've had those too.
So, you know, if we I call it being scientific about your own success, right? What a scientist looks at is what are the variables, what are the constants, what kind of things can we change, and what impact does that have on results? So, you know, you want to think through, and a good model for this is what are the things that I think, do, and say on good days, and what are the things that I think, do, and say on days that aren't so good? Right? If checking your email makes you cranky, I wouldn't do that first thing in the morning. It's probably going to make you cranky.
I recommend that anyway.
Yeah, exactly, right? But a lot of times, you know, some people, they have to work out. If they don't work out, they don't feel attractive, they don't feel confident. So we know for some people, working out is a little tiny thing that you can do that makes a huge difference in how productive and effective you are. You don't have to change everything about what you do, right? But if we said, let's just have you work out. Let's just have you do that one thing consistently because we know if you do that one thing, that makes a huge difference, right? For me, for example, if I don't eat, I get real – it's bad. It's very – if you've ever seen The Incredible Hulk, actually turning into The Incredible Hulk, it's a little like that when I don't eat.
You sound like my husband.
Right? Yeah, my friends, they call it hunger-aided rage. Right? Low blood sugar is very, very bad in my world. So, you know, if I'm on my way to a very important meeting with very important clients and I'm running a little bit late but I haven't had a chance to eat yet, I'm stopping for food. Because I know out of all the things that I could do that would have me be effective, that's one of the most important. So it's, my philosophy is, and there's, I did a series of books a couple years ago and we're rebranding them. They're going to be called Tweak, the Art and Science of Small Shifts. And I'm very interested in what are the little things that you change that get you disproportionately big results. It's a little bit like if you're driving your car on a road trip, you can fill up your windshield wiper fluid, and that's useful, but it's much more important. In fact, it's critical to make sure you've got a full tank of gas.
Right. You can get down the road without the windshield fluid, but not without the gas.
Precisely. So we don't want you changing everything, but we want you to think about what are some small things that you do that consistently help you be in a kind of mental state where you perform better. And the key is there, you're looking for a place where you are happy, confident, clear, and focused. And so what makes you happy? What helps you be confident? What produces clarity for you? What do you need in order to be focused for a day? And I'm a big fan of look at what all the gurus do and take their best ideas, but really pay attention to what works for you. You are a unique model. We can't necessarily do the same things with you that we would do with someone else, and we don't have to. You don't have to be someone that you're not in order to be effective and successful. You can be you, the schmuck that you are, right? All the good, bad, and ugly about you. But if we could tweak your environment a little bit so that you had a shot at performing better, you would.
Is there anything that a person can do to discover that? Because I know a lot of my students would say, oh, that's great, but I don't even know what it is that I do that does that for me.
Yes. Well, the key is, you know, I would have a very simple exercise. You just draw a line straight down the middle of the piece of paper, put good day on one side, bad day on the other. And again, look at what you think, do, and say on good days versus bad days. right? So the key is that you really want to start thinking scientifically about it. You've got to take a look at it almost like you're a character in a play. What does that character do? What are the thoughts that that character has on good days versus bad days, right? Typically, on good days, most people have the same kind of thoughts. We're basically pretty generous, right? We think, oh, that guy didn't mean to cut me off. It's not that big a deal, or I'm sure he'll get it to me eventually. On bad days, everyone's out to get us and particularly make our lives miserable, right? On good days, for me, I have a cute outfit to wear. And that is stupid, but incredibly effective. If I want to have a good day, there are few things that make as big a difference as having an outfit that I am excited to wear that I feel confident in.
Oh, I think that makes a lot of sense. When I go to a conference, and typically by the last day, it's when you've been really pushing hard and kind of tired or whatever. My biggest secret of that last day is wearing something that I know makes me look and feel great. That people will often compliment me, but even if they don't, I know that I feel better. And so I can say what.
Did I lose you guys? Are you there?
Nope. No, I'm still here.
I think my headset just cut up.
Ah.
So, you know, if you look through, right, and if you were going to teach somebody else about your day, what I found is mostly having people ask the question, right, what are the things that help make you happy? You know, I'll hear people say things like, man, I love to read books, and if I could just read once a week, I would be so happy. Well, great, mm-hmm. We don't have to change everything about your life, but let's pick three things, right? Let's have you read a book once a week and just see what it does to your overall happiness level and how good you feel and how confident you are.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, is one of the biggest secrets. You don't have to change everything to get life to be a lot better. It's the little things that you change. But we get lost in, there's 1,000 things I could change, right? I could clean up my whole office and redecorate my whole house. But you know what? The truth is, if I just bought new dishes or if I cleaned off my desk and that alone worked, right, then I would feel a lot better.
Right.
Does that make
Absolutely.
Sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So can you, what are some things that, can you guys see some things for yourselves in this conversation? That might be a good example for your listeners.
This is one of the first things that Stephanie helped me do a couple years ago when I first started working with her. And the thing that used to make my whole day bad was email. Oh, gosh.
Yep.
I get so many emails, first off, that just looking at it was a constant reminder that I had all this stuff to do because I get so many of them.
Yep.
And so instantly, the first thing she had me do was find a way to not have to go through all the emails.
Yes.
So my assistant now goes through my emails, and she takes the 10, maybe 20 emails a day that I actually have to do something with, and puts them in only one folder, and that's the only folder I'm allowed to look at. And I look at it at a specific time, not just first thing in the morning.
Yep.
And now I only have to deal with 10 emails, not 5,000. Wow, what a difference.
It's perfect. Mm-hmm. That's a perfect example.
Yep. That, and I do not look at emails first thing in the morning ever, because the minute somebody's going to say, I can't, the link isn't working, or, you know, whatever, and then that's going to set things off in a direction that's not always great. So I just, I have 2 times a day when I will look at emails, and that's it. I just don't mess with it all day long unless I know for sure. If I know, you know, somebody's going to send me something particular, of course I would, but just for that thing, you know, I don't just go and pour through them all day. I don't let them distract me in the middle of working on stuff. So those kinds of things make a huge difference. You know, a half an hour of focused time working on whatever project without hearing the email ping and say there's an email coming in or whatever, even as not being distracted by that, even if you don't go and do something with it, is still a big deal. So, you know, that's another thing for me. And that's something I recommend to my students, too, is don't do your email first thing in the morning. Get some productive work done. Feel successful.
Right.
Feel on top of it first.
Right. Well, and those are great examples. You know, for you, when you get negative emails, those are what we call momentum killers. Right? Like life is good and then this shows up, right? For some people, there are lots of things that can suck your momentum away. So you want to look at how do we minimize or eliminate momentum killers. So what you've done is minimize them by saying, I'm only going to check it twice a day. and then I'm prepared to deal with them, right? So if you can't eliminate it, you minimize it by minimizing your exposure to it.
That's under my belt. Yeah.
Yes, and minimizing your response. And then the other thing that you said, which is really great, is people, they don't spend enough time trenching, right? You know, we think of multitasking, but really what research has found is that when you stop and start, right? Multitasking is really just a thousand little stops and starts, and those take time. So a good strategy is to be able to trench where you set aside 20 minutes where you're just going to dig in and focus on one thing. And if you can get yourself moving, then you create momentum. So you build for yourself, right? So there's lots of different things that people can do, but you know, it's interesting because whenever I ask the question, right, what are some things that you know you should be doing or shouldn't be doing, everybody knows the answers to those questions. Nobody ever says, gosh, Alicia, I can't think of a single thing that I should stop doing or a single thing that I should start doing that would make my life better.
Right.
We all know, but we don't take the time to say, these are the three that I'm going to pick, right? I mean, it'd be, you know, you want to look at how do I get myself into that mental state where I'm happy, confident, clear, and focused on a more regular basis. And then you also want to deal with what are the momentum killers that get you, and do you have a plan for responding? Because normally what we do is we say, bad things are going to happen, and then I'm just going to suck it up and get through it. Well, that actually does not work at all. Right? And I think the part that you were pointing at from the interview I did with Wade Kelly a few years ago is one of my favorite strategies that I love to give people is that when bad things happen, right, you encounter a momentum killer, it damages your confidence, it makes you feel sad, it's you know, destroys your focus. It's important that you have some sort of reset button, some way that you can return yourself to a better emotional state. So my little trick is that when something goes wrong and life isn't working, or, you know, you drop your cell phone in the toilet and you have that moment, I'll say something funny like, well, at least I'm hot.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if you have those in advance, it makes things so much easier.
Yep.
An organization.
For sure. Hot. And a genius, yes.
The other thing we do is especially, and this is especially true of women, is that we really don't give ourselves enough credit, right? Mm-hmm. You got to know what you're good at, and I'm not good at everything, right? I want to be a mini Stephanie, not because I don't think I'm good at what I'm good at, but because she probably knows some stuff that I don't know, and I'm interested in knowing a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to sort of not give ourselves enough credit. So when somebody says we did a good job, we're, oh, yeah, I did a good job. Yeah. I could have done better. I could have done this. And so even if you don't say it to other people, you really want to make a big deal of your successes in your own head. I've been telling myself that I'm a genius now for about 6 years, and I'll be darned if other people haven't decided that it's true.
Isn't that great?
Now, I know that it's not in some cases, but it's a little bit like being a doctor on an airplane, right? They come running down the aisle and they say, is there a doctor on the plane? And you're sitting there thinking, man, I'm a doctor, I mean, technically, but I'm not as good a doctor as some of the other doctors that I know, so I don't know if I should stand up and say, there's a guy having a heart attack, you need to get your butt up and go help. And life is like that a lot of times. We don't necessarily have to be the best, but if you understand your own value, then you can go and be of aid. You can help people. And I think what we forget sometimes is that it's not about being the best. Sometimes it's about being the one who's there and who's willing to try. And that's actually what makes you the best in many cases. So, you know, you gotta have a good handle on what your worth is, and that's hard for most people. They don't actively manage their confidence. But if you do, you can do more good in the world, and you can feel better while you do it.
Yeah,
I love that about manage your confidence.
That's such a big point. One of the things that I teach my students to do, all of my students are people who are building a business that uses the power of the Internet. And one of the things that I tell them is that they have got to first see themselves as an expert before they can ever expect their prospects and customers to see them as an expert as well.
Yeah.
And that usually is something that's tough for them to do, especially when they're first getting started. They don't think of themselves as an expert. So I really like the advice you just gave, because it can really help them to get into this character of being an expert.
Yeah. Well, and one of the analogies that I would give them, and this is a little colorful. But, you know, it's sort of like being able to access a toilet or a bathroom when you need one. Depends on how big your need is, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes you need the best, cleanest, prettiest, whatever, and sometimes you just really, really need one. And there are times where, you know, I got a note last week from a guy, and he says, you know, I've been getting your emails for years and years and years, and I mostly keep wanting to delete them, but I never remember to unsubscribe, and mostly they've been annoying, and then today I read this one, and it was brilliant, and it changed my life, and I can't thank you. And I mean, you know, it's like, and this is a, you know, he's a professor at a very prestigious management school, and all I could think of was, where the hell did he get my, how did he get on my list, right? But
right. The
truth is, sometimes we all fall asleep to the things that we should do. We forget things that we know. And sometimes it may be really obvious stuff. And that's one of the hardest things probably for your clients, right? They're experts, but they don't value what they know because they know it so well.
Yes, exactly.
Like, you know, so it's direction.
Easy for them.
It is easy for them. It's their sweet spot. It's their gift. And so they, and human beings are notoriously bad at understanding that others don't know what we know or think like we think.
Right.
We have a hard time imagining the mind of another monkey, as it were. But if they understand that sometimes the value is that you're the guy who showed, you know, it's like directions in a strange city, right? You know the way. That knowing the way doesn't have any value for you because you know it so well you could drive it in your sleep. But to somebody who doesn't know the way, that has tremendous value. And maybe your clients aren't going to get them all the way down the road, but maybe that's not the point. It's being able to provide what value you have in the moment that you have it and not make yourself less valuable just because other people know more or have a fancier website or whatever it is. You're the guy who's there. It is like the doctor on the plane.
Absolutely.
And that's so true. What you're saying is whenever something is natural for anybody, it's so easy. You're not even having to think about it to do it. I think about the levels of competence. And there
yep.
is the unconscious competence, which is what you're saying. That's the, I'm so used to doing this, I'm really good at it. I don't have to think about how to do it. I don't even quite know exactly how I do it. I just know that I do it. And that's
right.
where experts often are. In fact, one thing that I've often done with clients to help them get to a level of, now I know what I do so that I can teach it or realize the value, is bringing that unconscious competence up to a level of, okay, I'm competent, and I also know how I do it. I know the steps. I know my system. I know my secret
yes.
sauce, whatever, you know, whatever it is that I do. I know how I do that and why it's so easy for me. And then oftentimes people will find that they can add significantly to what they charge for something because now they start to realize what it is for somebody who cannot do that thing. And you know, they realize the value more when they can bring it up to that level of conscious competence. And once you've got that, it's like catch yourself doing whatever it is that you do.
If you have a good...
Go ahead.
Sometimes it's great to have people do a skills inventory or an experience
yeah.
inventory. Those are really useful ways to build confidence. And then the other one is I like to have people go on a rant about other approaches that they don't favor within their industry. And that's not, you know, listen, I teach client development, so I teach people how to build relationships and strategically and all those different things. And for professional service providers, I'm very opposed to teaching them traditional sales methodologies, right? I had an attorney call me, and he said, we have an attorney at our firm who came in and now teaches sales and marketing, and he slid a big pile of motivational books across the table to Michael and said, I want you to read these. And about lost his cookies. You know, motivation is not the key for him. That's not going to help him as an attorney get clients. He doesn't need to get motivated. He needs to build networks of relationships with strategic referral partners. So I have strong feelings about that. But when you really start to look at why you believe what you believe and why others believe what they believe, it's a good way to really define what your value is, what your premise is, what you stand for, what's worth fighting for. And then you may not have a ton of confidence in you, but you have confidence in what you're committed to. And oftentimes when I work with people, that's what I have them remember, is that if your confidence is based on you, it's going to go up and down and up and down and up and down because you go up and down and up and down and up and down. But if your confidence comes from what you're committed to, that's a whole different ballgame.
Can you give us an example of that? I totally get what you mean, but I'm not sure that our listeners do.
Sure. No, that's perfect. You know, if you are sitting down on an airplane next to someone, right, and this is someone who, for whatever reason that they do, they intimidate you, maybe because they're older, maybe because they have a nicer watch than you do, whatever it happens to be, but the two of you strike up a conversation and they seem smarter than you, or again, whatever it is that has them seem like someone you couldn't contribute to, you don't have the confidence that your ideas, right? Maybe they're in your industry and they're really, really good and more successful. But you have something that you want to give them. You have something that you think would be a contribution and you don't have the confidence to give it to them. If your commitment is at the fore, right, if you're really focused on this person's up to something, I want to make a difference with them, that commitment gives you a right to say. That commitment gives you a reason to open your mouth. Because it's not about you should listen to me because I'm an authority and I have these degrees, whatever. It's I don't know if this is right for you, but I'm going to say it because you're up to something and it seems like this would help. It's the exact same thing as when you see somebody who, you know, if somebody had an accident outside your house, you would go running out. You wouldn't stop and ask yourself if you have the right degree. You wouldn't
right.
be grabbing degrees and diplomas off your wall, right? Now, you want to offer it in a particular way, but there is a moment in life when you really have to pick that you're either going to go with what you've got and give what you have to give or not. And most people spend a lot of time waiting to know something else or earn a different amount or have a nicer car or whatever it is to go out and make the difference that they're committed to making. But
that's not
a good approach.
I have such an example of this. There's a friend that I know, and every time she starts into a new track of whatever she thinks she's going to do, she's doing this real estate-ish thing right now, and it's like she's always on webinars and reading, listening, taking notes and on webinars and et cetera, and she has the systems and the tools and the blah, 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 on, and yet she's not out there doing it because she's afraid if she doesn't have the one answer to the one question. And even though she knows intellectually, well, she can look it up or ask somebody else, she just still, it gets herself in that paralysis point.
Right. Yeah, I wrote a book on, one of the books that I wrote was on failure, and one of the ways that we avoid failure is by, I got to know more. And I'm somebody who, you know, I got a house full of books. You cannot outbook me. I've read everything under the sun five times. But at the end of the day, human beings, they really struggle with who am I? Where am I allowed to go? What am I allowed to give? We have a part of our brain that wants us to be adventurous, that wants to go out and conquer mountains. And then we have another part that's designed to keep us safe. And those two parts are both useful, but if you let either one of them run the show, you're in trouble. Because if the adventurous part gets rolling, you'll be jumping out of airplanes with no parachute and not thinking twice about it. If the safe part gets rolling and gets too tight a grip, then you'll never leave your house. So there's always a conflict between those two voices in your head. But, you know, being a human is amazing because you have this opportunity to really think about who you want to be in the world. I don't know any other animal that really gets to choose who they want to be in the world. It's a blessing, but it's also a curse because it means you're responsible for choosing who you want to be in the world. And then you have to deal with all the feelings and insecurities it drives up about whether or not you should be that person, right? So it's a delicate mess.
Yep.
Yeah, it is.
But when you're giving, my interactions with people, and I have had lots and lots and lots of them, right? I've done extraordinary amounts of individual work with people. My experience is that there's something that each person wants to give. There's something that they want to contribute. And the way they contribute it throughout their lives may change. They may have, you know, a club that they're a part of in high school or a way they interact with friends and then a different job in their 20s and a volunteer work in their 30s. I mean, there's different ways, right? It could be raising your family. There's different ways that we give the thing that we want to give. But to the extent that you're surrendered to that highest version of yourself, right? I mean, really the truth is we're miserable no matter what. We're miserable when we're being our highest selves, doing our best work, and we're also miserable when we're sitting on the couch eating Cheetos. There are problems in both versions of life, but
right.
if you're surrendered to the life that calls for the highest version of yourself, the gifts that you really want to give, that person that you know you can be, when you're surrendered to those problems, you're happy. You're completely fulfilled. And when you're not, mm-hmm. you're frustrated and annoyed. But life is hard either way. There are problems in both camps. So it's which one do you want to pick?
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
Can people just consciously decide which way to pick? Or
no,
is there something that will make them go one way versus another? And if so, how do you find that?
Right. They mostly don't consciously pick, and that's the problem. Because if you would never yell at your kids if you were conscious. You would never wake up one morning and go, today I think I'm going to lose my temper with my children. Or I think I'll pick a fight with a colleague. You would never, ever do that, right? But it is that the difference between the animal portion of our brain and our neocortex, there's a whole bunch of all these different forces at work. What we get as human beings is the chance to wake up and choose. And mostly we're asleep. I sometimes use the analogy that there are two people that try to drive the bus that is your life. One of them's a schmuck, and one of them is awesome, like your highest self, right? The problem is your highest self falls asleep all the time, and then the schmuck is left to drive the bus. The schmuck doesn't care if you work out. The schmuck doesn't care if you yell at people. The schmuck doesn't care if you stay up too late. The schmuck does whatever the schmuck feels like at the moment. If you can wake up your highest self, then your highest self can direct the schmuck, right? And you're always going to have both. It's not a problem that you're a schmuck. It's that your highest self doesn't wake back up, right? The reason people read daily devotionals or study or get a coach or join a group is to wake themselves up, right? When we have these moments where somebody says something or we read something and the highest version of ourselves wakes up and again starts to choose which direction we want to go into. And then life goes along as life tends to do, and our highest self falls asleep again, and pretty soon the schmuck is at the wheel. And if you're smart, you have opportunities, like I'm sure the two of you in your friendship, you wake each other up. One of you falls asleep and you go, wait, you can't do that. That's not who you are. That's not what you're committed to. When your clients work with you, they're hiring you to wake them up. Right? As much as for the technical advice that you can give them, they're hiring you to wake them up. So if you know that the schmuck is going to take the wheel, if you know that you're likely to sleep, then what you want to do is put alarm clocks everywhere around you,
mm-hmm.
in the habits that you have and the people that you surround yourselves with. I think the best that any of us get is the chance to remind ourselves to wake back up and choose again. Because the best people among us, I mean, one of the things I say to people is, you know, a committed schmuck can change the world. And in fact, that's the only kind of person that has ever done it. Because I'm sure that Martin Luther King Jr. was a schmuck. I'm sure that Gandhi was a schmuck. I'm sure they didn't do everything right. I'm sure they mixed up their schedules and got stuff wrong and looked stupid sometimes. But they were committed. And it was the commitment that made possible the contributions that they made. So in your life, the game is to be a committed schmuck. And you got to know what you're committed to, and you got to ask yourself. And it's, you know, it's hard work, a good life. It doesn't happen by accident.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
That's just awesome. And I agree with you that pretty much every person that I have ever worked with is really there because they do want to make a difference. I think it's an innate part of every human being on this planet. What I do see, though, is not everybody realizes the ways in which they want to make a difference.
Yes.
And it does take some thought and planning. If you can really figure out the ways in which you want to make a difference and you set that as your long-term goal, working a plan that will lead you from where you're at to making that difference is pretty easy. But you've got to define the destination before you can go on that journey.
Yeah, and the destination, I think this is an important point as well, is that the destination is not just, you know, I wrote a book that changed millions of lives, right? The destination is also an experience.
Yeah.
Right? One of the things I see is people have a very hard time, human beings do, staying grounded in reality. We live primarily in a fantasy, right? We have a fantasy about our spouse. We have a fantasy about our children. We have a fantasy about the way traffic should be, right? Well, guess what? The reality is your spouse leaves their socks on the floor. Your kids are not always clean, and sometimes they lie to you about stuff because they're children, and that's part of what children do, right? Traffic is the way traffic is. It's not the way you think it should be. I mean, I've seen people literally do the same drive for 20 years, and every day they're mad and surprised and shocked and horrified that there's traffic. Well, you know,
hello.
Let's wake up a little, right? But we all have things that we do that with, right? I should be perfect. My desk should always be clean. My dishes should always be done. My laundry, what, life is messy. Life is like laundry. It's never, ever done. So, you know, it's not just a destination like I'm going to get to X and then I'll be happy. It's the experience you have along the way. And these are not simple questions. These are not you wake up one day, you write all of it down, and then the next day you go to work on your plan and it's done. Life is messy. It requires constant reexamination. It's the burden and the blessing, right? You get a chance to keep choosing, but if you want to have a great life, you got to keep choosing. And I think people have a hard time staying really grounded in the reality about themselves. Either they do one of two things. Either they assume wrongly that they can't do it, or they assume wrongly that they can. And they're not willing to really deal with what kind of money is it going to take, what kind of effort is it going to take, what kind of dedication is it going to take. Am I willing to go that distance? Am I willing to learn those things? Am I willing to conquer those fears, do the hard work? So it's usually that they're on one or two sides of the fence. They're either blindly hopeful, which is not useful, or they're blindly negative, which is also not useful. But that
there's
middle
never,
ground, pardon?
There's never a middle ground?
There is a middle ground. It's just harder to get to and harder to stay in, right?
Yeah.
The middle ground is where you're clear. It's where you have a reasonable perspective, right? You're not hopeful. And you're not fearful. You're clear, right? Hey, if we're going on a road trip, if you guys are going to come to Denver to eat dinner with me tonight, that's going to take something, right?
I have friends in Denver, and I often say, wish I could just twinkle my nose and be there, but that's just not how it works.
Right. So it's going to take something, right? What people fail to do is really look at what it's going to take. They need to look logistically, and they need to look emotionally. Right? What I've noticed, I'm sure you guys have seen this too, is that as businesses grow, the business owner, the business leader has to grow as well. Their emotional and professional development is often the lid on the business.
Mike Littman will say that every new level of success demands a new level of you.
Yes. And that doesn't mean that you have to be someone that you're not. It just means you have to be a smarter, sharper version of yourself. But let's face it, we're, as human beings, we all want that. We all strive for that, right? We get bored. Thanksgiving is about being comfortable, right? You get all comfortable, you eat all this food, and then what happens a little while later? You got to be uncomfortable. You got to get up and go for a walk. You got to get up and go to a movie. You get sick of the comfort. It's, again, those two contesting voices in your head. One wants comfort, one wants discomfort. One wants safety, one wants adventure. One wants to do nothing, and one wants to do everything right now. So I think that the bottom line is, because it's easy to get negative when you hear about all this, right? You're like, well, wait, I got these two voices, and I'm always up and always down. You got to keep choosing. But I think the optimistic version is, if you can make peace with the chaos, right? It's like laundry. If you can make peace with the fact that you're always going to do laundry, there's always going to be dirty clothes, then you can have a sense of humor about it, and then you can stay on top of it. And life is like that. If you know that you've got the two voices in your head, if you know that sometimes it's not going to go well, if you know that sometimes you are not going to be up to the life that you want for yourself, then you can have a sense of humor about it, and you can keep going, because you're never going to be happy if you don't.
Gotcha.
That makes a lot of sense.
It really does. And I think it helps to give people some tools to deal with stuff. I know that I'm involved in a project where a bunch of people seem to be getting into this space of overwhelm, which is paralyzing them and causing all kinds of resistance. And I think just realizing that stuff comes up and using some of the strategies that you talked about earlier around finding what helps to make you feel good and successful and adding, you know, three of those little things into your life would make a huge difference for them.
And that works with organizations as well. Families, businesses, they all have things that they do that help produce a happy, confident, clear, focused state. And, you know, in the case of a group where things have started to not go well, well, you know, what happened? Is it we're now dealing with the reality of the project, so we've got to move some things around? Is it that we're actually not clear about what it is we should be doing, so people aren't as engaged because we really don't know if we're going to get there or if it's worth it? But you can look at how do we create a group that's happy, confident, clear, and focused? How do we create a family that fits that description? Not all the time. That's the other thing that I think is easy to forget. You're not going to be up all the time. You're not going to be in that high mental state all the time. You're going to move back and forth. It is the old 80-20 rule, right? In the research that I've done, the anecdotal, most people spend maybe 10% of their time happy, confident, clear, and focused. The rest of the time, they tend to be in survival mode, where they're reacting. Now, that's not necessarily bad. You know, being in love puts you in the survival. You might be happy and confident when you're in love, but you're typically not clear, and you're typically not very focused. It's not necessarily bad, right? Your best friend calls you in the middle of your workday. You're no longer focused, right? But it's not bad. So if you know that you're going to spend time in the other place, the game is when I need to be productive. How do I get myself a little closer to that state or get into it a little faster or spend a little more time?
Right.
It's a cheater's secret, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Rhonda, why don't we let folks know where they can find out more about our guest today and our website and whatnot?
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you also, Alicia, I have the Maverick & Company site. Is there is that the best place that people should find you, or is there a better place for you?
Sure. No, that's a good place to find me. And then the second place is we do, which your listeners might find interesting, we do a little thing called the Daily Dose of Maverick. It's a free audio subscription. They're usually about 2 minutes in length. They come out almost always 5 days a week, sometimes not, because sometimes I'm a schmuck. But they're just little two-minute audio blurbs about different things, either around your business or your personal performance. And that website is www.thedailydoseofmaverick.com. And we're, you know, as I said, sometimes I'm a schmuck too. So we have a project that's been outstanding for about 6 months now to integrate everything and upgrade the website. And I don't know, when clients call, I just think it's more fun to go hang out with them.
Yeah.
Oh, you're funny. Committed schmuck, baby. Committed schmuck. Pardon?
It's
fun to hang out with the clients.
Oh, same as in here, we're both.
Or is there more than just you?
I have, from time to time, I'll bring other people in, and then I end up saying we a lot. It's just a bad verbal habit. But a couple years ago, I had two interns who I still rope them in for projects occasionally. So mostly it's me, but occasionally there's somebody else who makes up the and company. In fact, when one of my interns, the summer that he spent with me was in between years of his MBA, and he got to pick his own title, because I think that's a smart thing to do, right? He became Director of Intelligence for Maverick & Company.
Oh, that's cute.
Which really was about the only intelligence internally business systems that we had available.
Too funny. Well,
when you start
to redo the website and integrate everything, give me a shout. That's what I am an expert in.
Oh, fantastic. Right. That's so handy.
Isn't that handy? Yeah, I work a lot with people in their books, and I noticed that your book is still in the process. And so if a way can be of service to you with that, I want you to let me know. I would be happy to assist you, as I do have a system that helps make it really profitable and productive.
Oh, that's awesome. I appreciate that. Yeah, I wrote four of them a couple of years ago, and it's a process, man. It makes a huge difference to have support around that, because it takes something.
Yeah,
it really does.
It can be pretty easy the way that I teach it.
Nice. Well, ladies, thank you so much for having me on. I hope that the chickens stay warm and you get that motorhome fixed.
Me too. We've been on the road for 6 years, and we just bought a new motorhome in August. We put, I don't know, like 39 hours of running time on it, and it all of a sudden needs $60,000 worth of repairs.
Oh, my gosh.
It's not a little repair bill.
Wow. But, yeah, they should. that's not good.
No, not good at all. We had to get lawyers and everything. So, oh, well, it is what it is. I normally am not in the cold at this time of the year. For 6 years, I've not been in the cold. But we were back on the road, or at least in the car, driving south soon, because it is really cold up here.
Well, just keep telling yourself that you still have the fact that you're good-looking going for you, because that actually does help a lot.
Well, you know, the thing that really made the biggest difference is two of my students are in the area that the motorhome happened to break down in, and out of a fluke, they happen to have a huge house that has a completely separate apartment in the lower level, so I'm not actually homeless. I actually have a roof over my head, which is really great, because otherwise they would be homeless.
Wow.
So, and it just happens to be about 2 miles from my old house that we left 6 years ago. Just a fluke. We didn't even know these people then. We met them in July. So, you know, it's really interesting how the universe delivers sometimes.
It's very, very interesting. It's very interesting. And we've had some interesting people from Denver and from the Colorado area to be our guests on the show. And Erin Siebold is one of them. I don't know, Alicia, if you know her. Yeah, do you
I do.
Do. Okay.
She's actually a good friend of mine. She's great. You'll love her.
We did. We had her on. She was fabulous. We had a great time. I used to live in Denver for 13 years in the southeast part of Denver. And I said, gosh, after I move out of Denver, I meet all these really cool people. Several of the folks I know are either Denver, Colorado Springs, Boulder, you know, somewhere. I'm like, didn't know any of them before I moved because I was having a different phase of my life then, I guess, you know. So.
Yep.
Well,
it's funny
project,
how that works.
The project that Rhonda referred to, aren't the tall trees in Colorado Springs?
Yes, they're in Colorado Springs.
You would really enjoy the tall trees. Their main website is www.thetalltrees.com. And the new site that launches December 8th is howtoliveonpurpose.com.
Oh, nice.
You've got to get introduced to them as well.
Well, and if you guys would send me an introduction to Stephanie, I'd love to connect with her.
I will do that.
Yeah, we'll definitely take
you off the show
too,
because I know Stephanie would love to meet you as well. She's in Scottsdale, Arizona. Her main website is Success IQ University, and her blog is stephaniefrank.com with a PH.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we'll get you connected with her, though. But yeah, that way
you
can look.
Never know too many great people.
That's one of the things that's most fun.
Do you also do personality, style, and values evaluations to help people learn more about what their strengths are and where they should be focusing their efforts and whatnot?
I don't do any of that formally. I might give them some insights or point them towards some resources, but it's not part of the formal packaging that I do.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So the only reason I'm asking is I really want to do some sort of evaluation with a number of my students who are really stuck on what am I an expert on. Can you recommend any resources that we can point them to?
There's a couple different ones. There's professionally the one that I've heard of but I have not used is, what is it called? What Are My Strengths? It's an assessment book, and it comes with a CD, and one of my clients has used that extensively with her people.
Okay.
What Are My Strengths? It's a very popular book, so any bookstore should have it. So particularly for professionals, I think that one would probably be the one that I would recommend the most. A lot of the things that I recommend to people are more around general performance, not necessarily technical specialties about what they ought to be doing with their work. So I don't know if those would be useful for you.
Okay, I will definitely go and look into that. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely.
I recommend a lot is crgleader.com, crgleader.com. They have about 20 different examinations, all of them online. I've used the personality style and values. There's two different ones, personality style and values indicator. And I've also looked at, there's one on jobs profile, I think. There's one on entrepreneurial profile. There's about 20 different ones, and I'm really impressed with the CRG Leader programming. They've done a really great job of creating these in a way that makes it easy for the person to take the test, and it does a really good job of providing a really solid evaluation afterwards.
Right. You know, I do have actually, now that I think about it, I have a client down in Texas who is really, really brilliant, and she's done some very interesting career counseling with people. So she has an assessment that she does, and when she did it with me as part of our process so that I could do some work with her, it was extraordinarily useful. Because I've I've done a bunch of different stuff, but she is absolutely brilliant, and she has she works with professionals who are sort of reinventing themselves, and then also does a lot of work with college students to help them figure out where they should be leaning and why. So she, not necessarily here's your perfect job, but really here's the environments that are going to be a good match for you. Here's the things that you should look for. She's brilliant. I would highly recommend her.
Stuff with one of my clients. One of my clients is a guy who has a program that helps college students get into medical school.
Yeah,
but he's just getting ready to launch something that he calls the 11-day GPA challenge that's meant to help college students improve their GPA. It will be the first of a series of challenges that he will put out geared toward college students. And although he does help medical students get into medical school, he doesn't want to leave everybody else out with these challenges that he's doing, and he knows that he's going to attract all different kinds of college students. So we're looking for someone right now that he can joint venture with who can do career counseling and whatnot with college students. That might be a really good fit.
Yeah, let me look up her stuff and send it to you.
That would be great. My guy's name is Don Osborne, and his site is inquarta.com. inquarta.com. And, just for the listeners, what we're doing right now is really kind of a brainstorming of joint ventures to happen or strategic alliances. My students always say, how do you always run into so many joint ventures? How do they land in your lap? And it's from having conversations like this one where we realize that we have, resources that both of us have that could turn into things for other people. Just another way of making a difference, right?
Exactly.
Yes. Yes, it is. And it's a great way to find those resources and make sure, because every single one of us, we have resources that are currently not being used to their greatest potential. And this is just a way to get those things activated, making a difference, and, changing lives, making some more money in the process as well.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I
want to talk a little bit more about this making a difference. Right now, with the Christmas season upon us, there are all these movies on that are, about people making a difference. One of my favorites, The Ultimate Gift, was on the other day, and all these other types of movies talking about different ways that people are making a difference. It's a topic that I talk about often, along with the topic of social entrepreneurship. But I've been thinking about it because I've seen all these movies coming on lately, and I think so often when people hear about the topic of making a difference, they think it's got to be something huge. When you were referring to it earlier, you weren't necessarily referring that it has to be something huge, right?
No, definitely not. The sense of, for me, and this is for me personally, so I don't want to, speak for anybody else, but I think human beings, it's lonely being human. It's just lonely. Nobody else really understands how you feel. Nobody else really understands the totality of your experience. you know, sometimes we bump into people who get it or get us in a particular view of our lives, but it can be very lonely. Sometimes our loneliest times are with the people we love the most, right? It's a lonely venture. I think when you connect with somebody and you really contribute to them, it requires vulnerability on your part and theirs, and it opens up a connection that, for me, is an experience of divinity, right? It's that magic between human beings. It's a connection to something greater than both of us. And, you know, that happens when you pay for the person behind you in line at McDonald's, because it's this little moment, right? It's this, you know, it is this experience of we're all alone, but we're all in the same boat about being alone. So it's, it's complete difference. It's where your ego surrenders and you're present to something greater than both of you. And I think sometimes the most powerful ways to do that are the smallest. You know, it's the card that you send to somebody that makes a big difference. It's smiling at the stressed out mom in the grocery store. It's, you know, if you have something to give, give that. And if you can give big, give big, in terms of your contribution, your support to someone else. But, you know, there are those of us who are very blessed to have found professions where we get to make major contributions to the direction of people's lives on a pretty regular basis. But really, if you're on the lookout for it, if you're somebody who's committed to making a difference, then you probably do that everywhere. And if you're not, then you probably don't.
The vast majority of our listeners are just starting businesses. And I like to say that you can use your business to achieve anything you want as long as you do it on purpose. So why not plan a business that can simultaneously make a difference, whether it's a small way or a big way? If you're strategic about it, if you know that this is the way in which you want this business to make a difference, you can make it do anything you want it to do.
Yeah, and I would say that one of the best ways to make a big difference in the world is, ironically, to be a little selfish. You know, you don't have to do it the way everybody else does, right? Maybe you don't like smiling at moms in the grocery store because you're exhausted because you just ran a day worth of workshops. Okay, great. That's all okay, right? But having a vision where you take care of yourself, where you are one of the people that you make a difference with, is huge, because you don't want to get locked into this martyr syndrome and have to do it for everybody else. And, you know, I love Colleen Abdullah. She runs a communications company called Wow Communications. They're not national, they're regional, but they're based here in Denver, oddly. They're not in the Denver region, but they have their headquarters here. And she has this great distinction between customer service and customer experience. And they say, don't talk to the company, and they've won an obscene amount of awards for a company that's not even national around their service and the kind of quality that they have. They sell cable, right? It's the same thing everybody else sells. It's a commodity. So they talk about it's not about customer service, because you can be served and still not be taken care of, right? So they have a whole company dedicated to creating a customer experience that meets certain measures, that provides a certain experience for their consumer. That's extraordinary. That makes a huge difference in the world, right? I can be going through a drive-through and I can get service, but my experience is not that I connected with another human being. My experience is not that I was well taken care of or that anybody gave a rat's hind that I went through that day, right? I can get great experience from a very brief interaction that can change everything for me that day. So it doesn't have to be big. Yeah, but it should be something that is the way you like to love people, right? The way you want to give. It should feel so great to you. So it's not necessarily everybody should be making a difference, although we all do. It's just, are you using your powers for good and not evil, right? But, you know, what lights you up so that one of the people that served as you provide service is actually you? Because if you're really lit up, you'll have more to give.
Right.
And that's better for everyone.
And even when you're building a website that's going to be the place that you bring people online, it's not about just having information on a website. It's about creating a customer experience through your website.
Exactly.
And not all websites do that.
Yeah, I relate it to the smell of turkey, right? Most people, especially professional service providers, they get caught up in their own knowledge. And so they want to give knowledge because that's what they're focused on, right? But, you know, if you're trying to sell someone a turkey dinner, a Thanksgiving dinner, if you're a nutritionalist, you will talk to me about the nutritional content of turkey. And if you're a chef, you'll probably set me down a sample of the cranberry sauce and mashed potatoes and the gravy and the stuffing and the turkey. I'll have all these little dishes in front of me. But you know how you sell turkey? The smell of turkey, right? It's that one thing. So when they go to your website, they should be able to get a sense of your turkey smell, right? That one thing, it is the thing that they connect with that has them realize, oh, you're the one, right? Because I can talk to you about the nutritional content of turkey all day long. I don't think anybody cares. Now, they may still want the turkey dinner. It's just that the nutritional content of turkey is not going to get them there. It's not a signal they recognize and will respond to. But the smell of turkey is. So, you know, the website that I have up is not a perfect website by any stretch. I'm sure you guys got a giggle when you looked at it because sometimes I giggle when I look at it. But the thing it does well is when you're there, you get a sense of what it's like to be around me. You get a smell of turkey. It's designed that way so that by the time you're done, if you're my kind of people, if you're the one who's going to fall in love with me and think that I'm fabulous and I get you and, oh, she's like my friend, you know, if you're that, then you're going to love that website. And if you're not going to like me in person, the website should make you feel mildly uncomfortable.
Yes. And
it's designed that way.
Not bad, right?
No, it's not bad, but, you know, I did a class once, and I put in the instructions for the class reasons not to take this class. And number one was you don't like homework, and then number two was you don't like sarcasm. And I just explained, you know, and it was a very, you know, kind of pithy little piece, and it was meant to be forwarded on by people in the class. And so one of the participants came, and she said, you know, I sent that to a friend of mine. She read it. She said, I don't like sarcasm. I'm not doing this class. And she said, I tried to explain to her that it's not that bad, that you're really great. I really think she should need to be in the class. And I said, here's what you don't get in. Is you see that she opted out because of that statement. And that's all you can see, that I lost that one registration because I put that in there. I said, but let me ask the rest of the room. And I asked the room full of people, how many of you, when you read that, you knew for sure you were taking this class? And the whole room raised their hand.
Right.
Because that's what you get when you meet me in person. If you don't get that on paper, then there's no point. And it should be that way for your clients. You have to find a way to get your smell of turkey, your particular brand, your flavor, the experience of being with you into all the different mediums that you use to connect with people. Otherwise, what are you doing?
Exactly. And, you know, for so many of my students, at the beginning, when they're first getting started and whatnot, they seem to think that they want everybody coming to their website, and if they offend anybody causing them to leave, that that's a bad thing. And I think it's a great thing.
It is a great thing.
Not everyone is going to want to do business with you, period.
And you don't want to do business with everyone.
Yes.
No.
So anybody can buy my book. Right? Anybody can buy my books. Well, not currently because we don't have them available right now, but when they're up, anybody can buy my books, but we have to have a particular kind of connection in order for me to take you on as a client.
It
is like getting married.
It really is. One of my friends who is a coach, and he is really good with life coaching, but he has this tendency to find some clients who are real prima donnas, and then he gets all into this thing of working with them, and I said, you know, if you had a kind of a prima donna's need not apply policy, you probably would get less of those people, then you wouldn't have to feel like you had to manage them and work with them and coddle them and cosset them and all this other stuff, because they're not the people that you want anyway.
Yeah, the model I use that you guys will probably find cute is we call it sell to the choir. So, you know, there's a reason that you don't preach to the choir, right? You don't preach to them because they're in service for three services every Sunday, and if the choir ain't got it, ain't nobody getting it. But you sell to the choir because the choir represents those people that are your best clients, the ones who you naturally click and connect with. They get you, you get them. It's okay to do business with the congregation. Members of a congregation might look exactly like the choir with every bit of dedication, and they might be a good match. Or they might be people who, you know, in my hometown, we call them Christmas Catholics, right? People who show up once a year for services. And that's a congregation member, too. because, you know, financially you might need to work with some congregation members. They're not ideal, but they're not bad. And then you have heathens. Mm-hmm. And you never work with heathens. And you need to be able to recognize who fits into which category, and all your messaging should be aimed at the choir. It should be aimed at having the choir go, oh, my gosh, I love this person. It should be aimed at having the heathens go, this does not feel right. I don't like this. Let's not pursue this. And then the congregation can fall where they may. But if you were it's just like, it is like dating to get married, right? You have qualifications in your head. You have things that you intuitively and informally know are warning signs or are green lights. There are values that have to match in order for you to get married. It should be the same with clients. And you get this weird halo effect when you focus on who you want, not just based on a target demographic of or a demographic indicator like age or size of business, but psychographic indicators, the kind of personality they have, the kind of person they are, the kind of things that are important to them. When you focus on that big picture, you can narrow it down to a very specific group of people, and then you end up getting more people anyway.
Yes. I hope it's okay, but I will give you the attribution for it, but I've got to use your selling to the choir with my students. They will love that.
I actually have
a flow chart of the dating relationship and how it relates to a business that is online.
That's
and
funny.
It goes from the blind date, which is kind of like the very first visit to your website.
Yep.
Your keyword is like the phone number that gets you in touch with the blind date. And it goes all the way up to somebody buying your high-end coaching program, which is like getting married.
Right.
That is just brilliant.
Yeah, and I love the selling to the choir. Yeah, it's
mm-hmm.
a very useful, I mean, that's what I do with people, right? It's find the messages that make sense and, you know, resonate, right? It took, I think, 4 years to figure out the sell to the choir analogy. But it is a useful model to really remember. In traditional sales and marketing, you're supposed to sell to everybody. But in selling to the choir, you're not. You're really focused on a very narrow band of people. That's client development. It's knowing who you should marry and why, and helping those people find you and recognize you as the one that they want. It's not about persuasion. It's not about motivation. It's not about a numbers game. It's about that kind of understanding, that kind of profiling, and that kind of messaging so that people can – it's finding what the smell of turkey is.
Well,
most people aren't good at it.
When you do find the right people to marry, those people – need to be your biggest supporters. They're the ones that are out in front of you singing your praises to everyone just like a good spouse really would. So
well,
it's what I
actually
call having people who become evangelists for your business.
Right. And I would actually I would push back a little bit on that, because one of the things that I work with people on a lot is referrals. And I think the dynamics of how referrals really work aren't very well understood by the community at large. Now,
let's talk about this
exactly,
for a minute.
Yeah, you're exactly right about evangelists. There are those wonderful people who, they get it, they love you. You know, you guys are an evangelist for the people in your communities. You're connectors. You understand the value of that. You have made a conscious or either an unconscious habit you formed or a conscious choice to really be someone who creates opportunities for others. You like
yes.
it, you enjoy it, and you do it frequently, right?
Yes.
The challenge is that most people are not like that. The average person
right.
does not send referrals. And we think
correct.
There's this myth, right, that if I'm good at what I do, then they should evangelize for me, and they will. The problem is that's a false premise. If you really
right.
think about what has you open your mouth, not you guys, but the average person, your average listener, right, there are people who've provided great service to you, gone above and beyond, and you never opened your mouth. There's usually two reasons why. The first thing is we don't be specific enough with people about who they should send us, right?
Okay.
If I want to refer you business, I always use the analogy of a room full of 100 of my friends at Starbucks, right? And you and I have coffee, and I think you're awesome, and you do great work for me, and I want to send you to people. If I look into that room of 100 people, and I can't differentiate between the ones I should bother talking to about you and the ones I shouldn't, am I going to go talk to all 100 anyway? Probably
nope.
not. I don't
right.
have time, right? I might bring it up with somebody, but if I don't really know that they're a good fit, it is a little bit like matchmaking, right? People sometimes call me and they go, Alicia, I got this great guy for you. He's single.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not enough to make a connection, right? But if I look in and
right.
I go, wow, you know, these people are a really good fit for you. These are people who are going to be an ideal match. I just did this with somebody who's referred me business in the past yesterday. And I said, well, Maureen, who should I be sending to you? She said, my business owners run successful businesses. Usually they've got more than $3 million in revenue, right? Those are demographic indicators. But she said, you know what? They're people with a good sense of humor. They're really
mm-hmm.
grounded, and they're usually in over their heads, either because things aren't going well and they don't know how to dig themselves out of that hole, or because things are going really well and the wheels are starting to fall off. Like, they're just growing beyond their own capacity, and they're not sure what they ought to do about it. So every day they're just kind of getting by, and they're working longer and longer hours, but they're still sort of stuck, you know, and not just stuck but in quicksand, like it's sinking, it's pulling them down. That's a pretty clear set of indicators. It's demographic, it's psychographic, it tells you something about the situation. If I look into that crowd at Starbucks, I can find people who match that description, right?
Uh-huh.
If I can find your who, then the second problem that I have is I have to figure out what to say about you.
Yeah.
Right? If uh-huh. I don't know what to say, I'm going to bring you up and then not know, and you're going to, you know, hey, you guys should really work with Maureen, but blah, blah, blah. And I'm not going to know how to make that connection. And the more complicated your offering is, or the more specialized, right, the more unique the value
yeah.
is that you provide, the more important that messaging is. Because it's
yeah.
not what I can explain to you and get you to understand about me and my business. It's what I can explain to you that is translatable for you to then remember and explain to the right person that's a third party. That's hard.
Well, We only have about 90 seconds left. I've got to send you a recording of my story of Joe because
okay.
there's two ways that referrals happen. The way that you just described is one, but there is an even
right.
more natural way that occurs, and that
right.
is the story of Joe.
I teach
yep.
stories to people all the time. I love the storytelling thing. It's a perfect shortcut because it tells you the who and it tells you the what to say, and it's the way our brains think. So that was one of the reasons, by the way, I was excited to meet you guys.
Awesome. Yes.
I am so glad that you were on this show, and I can't wait to introduce you to Stephanie. Please give me feedback. I can't wait to see if you guys are as synergistic as I think you will be.
Thank you. I so appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me on and letting me talk. It's one of my favorite things.
I love
well,
it.
We were
it's
glad to have
it.
You.
Yep.
And again, you can connect with Alicia at what you are all around us.
Sure, Maverick and.
Sorry, go ahead.
MaverickandCompany.com and the Daily Dose of Maverick.com.
Thank
mm-hmm.
you so much. And
thank
have
you.
A wonderful week, everybody. We'll be back next week on Tuesday at noon Eastern here on Relationship Marketing 101. Have a great week.
Come back next week for Relationship Marketing 101.